Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Anna Mateo, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is John Russell.
American Rachel Van Leer developed signs, also called symptoms, of COVID-19 on March 11th, 2020. That same day, medical experts declared the disease a pandemic, meaning the new coronavirus was spreading internationally. Now, a year later, Van Leer is still waiting for her COVID-19 symptoms to disappear and for experts to come up with some answers. The Texas woman is among tens of thousands of COVID patients known as long haulers. Long haulers have symptoms that continue or reappear months after they first became infected with coronavirus. It is unclear how many people are experiencing the condition and why it is happening. "We're faced with a mystery," said Dr. Francis Collins, chief of the United States National Institutes of Health. "How many people are affected, and how long does it last? Is it limited to COVID-19 disease, or can other infections lead to the condition? Could some symptoms be unrelated to COVID-19? The U.S. Congress is providing $1 billion to Collins' agency, the NIH, to seek answers for those questions and more. So, the NIH is designing studies to follow at least 20,000 people who have had COVID-19. Collins said the agency has never dealt with a long-hauler condition as widespread before. "We don't have time to waste," he said about the research. There have been an estimated 30 million U.S. cases of COVID-19 and 119 million worldwide. Even a small percentage of patients that develop long-term health issues could become a major problem. The many reported symptoms of long-haul COVID include extreme tiredness, pain, and shortness of breath. Sleeping problems and difficulty thinking, often called brain fog, are also common. And medical experts have reported organ damage among long haulers, including lung scarring and enlarging of the heart. Scientists aim to understand whether these symptoms are directly linked to the virus or to some other health issue. Is it just a very delayed recovery, or is it something even more alarming and something that becomes the new normal? Collins said. There are a few stories about what might be causing the long-lasting symptoms. One is that the virus remains in the body at very low levels but still causes organ or tissue damage. Another possibility is that the virus activates the body's natural defense system and somehow prevents that system from returning to normal. A third idea is that the virus causes small blockages to form in blood vessels, the tubes through which blood travels. The 35-year-old Van Leer says she was in great health when she got COVID-19. She was a busy mother of three who exercised often. First came a chest cold, then a rise in body temperature. Testing showed she did not have a flu infection. Soon after, she developed severe headaches, fatigue, and stomach sickness. Her symptoms were so severe she sought emergency room treatment. I was very scared because no one could tell me what was going to happen to me, Van Leer said. Over the next several months, symptoms would come and go. Burning lungs, a very fast heartbeat, shaking hands, and hair loss. While most have disappeared, she still sometimes experiences a racing heartbeat. Van Leer is a member of Survivor Corps, one of several online support groups formed during the COVID health crisis. The group has thousands of members. Some are taking part in studies to help speed research. I'm John Russell.
In the Iraqi desert, a 72-year-old woman carefully digs in the sand for treasure. Here it is, the truffle, a blessing from God, says Zahra Buhayrd. In her hands, she holds a truffle, a kind of fungus that grows under the ground. It is used in cooking around the world and is a costly food. She said rain came and then thunder, bringing truffles up to the surface. She and her family of seven have spent weeks looking for seasonal truffles. The rare food has provided the family with additional money. Learning to hunt for truffles requires an understanding of the dangers in the desert. The hunters must deal with the severe weather of Iraq's southern desert. There are dangerous animals and military equipment left from years of war. The father of her granddaughter is Mohsen Farhan. He said, "We are afraid of wolves. There are a lot here. And there are mines. A while ago, someone died. Landmines left over from the Gulf War in 1991 remain unexploded and underground. The explosive devices could be mistaken for truffles by an inexperienced person. But to some, the dangers are worth it. This year, truffles can be sold for up to $7 a kilogram. Iraq's desert truffle costs less than European truffles. Those are rarer and can cost hundreds of dollars or more for a kilogram. But Iraq's economy is in crisis. So the local truffles are a big help to this truffle-hunting family. This year, however, the rains came late. Buhayrd could only find about 1 kilogram of truffles each day. That amount is about one-tenth of what she would dig up in a good year. Her granddaughter, 5-year-old Riam, helps by turning over stones and digging the earth with her hands. The child joins the truffle hunt with her family to learn a trade and the desert lifestyle. I'm Ana Mateo.
Scientists say that for the first time, they have developed early human-like embryo structures in a laboratory. The research could lead to new methods in reproductive technology. It is also likely to raise new ethical questions. Researchers say the lab-created structures seemed to model blastocysts, which form during the early stages of human embryonic development. two separate research groups say they used human cell material to successfully create the structures. The results were recently described in two papers in the publication Nature. The teams noted that their work was carried out only for research purposes, not with the goal of reproducing human embryos. The findings could help scientists gain a better understanding of early human development. The area of research has historically been very difficult to study. That is because few human embryos are available, and such studies are subject to many ethical and legal restrictions, an article in Nature noted about the research. Progress in the field of early human development could lead to improved infertility treatments and help prevent pregnancy loss and birth defects. Jun Wu is a molecular biologist at Southwestern Medical Center at the University of Texas. He led one of the research teams. He told the Associated Press he thinks the results can support new research in the field without the need to experiment on human embryos. Wu's team used embryonic stem cells to produce the blastocyst-like structures. The second team used a reprogramming method to turn human skin cell tissue into stem cells for research. Blastocysts form a few days after an egg has been fertilized, but before the cells attach to the uterus to become an embryo. Wu said the new models were similar to blastocysts about 3 to 10 days after fertilization. Both groups said the lab-created structures were not the same as naturally formed embryos, and it is unclear whether they could develop into actual embryos. Scientists had already created similar structures of mouse cells in a lab, but this is the first time they were made from human cells. Researchers attempted to turn the lab-generated mouse cell structures into embryos, but they were not successful. In the United States, federal funding is not available for research involving human embryos or blastocysts. Several states ban such research altogether. Some scientists use blastocysts donated from fertility centers for research into the cause of infertility and diseases present from birth. The new work should permit them to expand such research. The researchers noted that their creations were not meant to be used for human reproduction. "There is no implantation," said Amanda Clark, a stem cell biologist at the University of California, Los Angeles, who took part in the experiments. "These structures are not transferred to a uterus or uterus-like structure," she said. "There is no pregnancy." But one scientist not involved in the research said it could be difficult to see clear differences between blastocysts resulting from fertilization and the structures created in a lab. Shukrat Mittalapov, a human embryologist at Oregon Health and Science University, told the AP that both groups show how closely they resemble real embryos. Mittalapov said, "If they are really as good as embryos, should they be treated as embryos? This brings new ethical issues. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about life in the United States during the 1960s. The 1960s began with the election of the first president born in the 20th century, John Kennedy. For many Americans, the young president represented a spirit of hope for the nation. When Kennedy was murdered in 1963, many felt that their hopes died too. This was especially true of young people and members and supporters of minority groups. A time of innocence and hope soon began to look like a time of anger and violence. Many Americans protested to demand an end to the unfair treatment of black citizens. Many more protested to demand an end to the war in Vietnam. And many protested to demand full equality for women. By the middle of the 1960s, it had become almost impossible for President Lyndon Johnson to leave the White House without facing protesters against the war in Vietnam. In March of 1968, Johnson announced that he would not seek another term in office. In addition to President Kennedy, two other influential Americans were murdered during the 1960s. Civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was shot in Memphis, Tennessee in 1968. Several weeks later, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy's brother, was shot in Los Angeles, California. He was campaigning to win his party's nomination for president. The two murders resulted in riots in cities across the country. The unrest and violence affected many young Americans. The effect seemed especially bad because of the time in which they had grown up. By the middle 1950s, most of their parents had jobs that paid well. They expressed satisfaction with their lives. They taught their children what were called middle-class values. These included a belief in God, hard work, and service to their country. Later, many young Americans began to question these beliefs. They felt that their parents' values were not enough to help them deal with the social and racial difficulties of the 1960s. They rebelled by letting their hair grow long and by wearing unusual clothing. Their dissatisfaction was strongly expressed in music. Rock and roll music had become very popular in America in the 1950s. Some people, however, did not approve of it. They thought it was too sexual. These people disliked the rock and roll of the 1960s even more. They found the words especially unpleasant. The musicians themselves thought the words were extremely important. As singer and songwriter Bob Dylan said, "There would be no music without the words." Bob Dylan produced many songs of social protest. He wrote anti-war songs before the war in Vietnam became a violent issue in the United States. One was called "Blowin' in the Wind."
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand. Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
In addition to songs of social protest, rock and roll music continued to be popular in America during the 1960s. The most popular group, however, was not American, it was British, the Beatles, four rock and roll musicians from Liverpool. The Beatles' song, I Want to Hold Your Hand, went on sale in the United States at the end of 1963. Within 5 weeks, it was the biggest selling record in the country. Other songs, including some by the Beatles, sounded more revolutionary. They spoke about drugs and sex, although not always openly.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies.
In the 1960s, do your own thing became a common expression. It meant to do whatever you wanted without feeling guilty. 500,000 young Americans did their own thing at the Woodstock Music Festival in 1969. They gathered at a farm in New York State. They listened to musicians such as Jimi Hendrix and Joan Baez, and to groups like The Who and Jefferson Airplane.
Look what's happening out the street, got a revolution.
Got a revolution.
Hey, I'm dancing down the street, got a revolution.
Got a revolution.
Hey, little baby, on the people I meet,
got a revolution.
Woodstock became a symbol of the young people's rebellion against traditional values. Many young people called themselves hippies. Hippies believed there should be more love and personal freedom in America. In 1967, poet Allen Ginsberg helped lead a gathering of hippies in San Francisco. No one knows exactly how many people considered themselves hippies, but 20,000 attended the gathering. Another leader of the event was Timothy Leary.
Now, energy comes.
He was a former university professor and researcher. Leary urged the crowd in San Francisco to tune in and drop out. One drug that was used in the 1960s was lysergic acid diethyl amide, or LSD. LSD causes the brain to see strange, colorful images. It can also cause brain damage. Some people say the Beatles' song, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, was about LSD.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not
Get a bite all day, but don't you rush away.
As many Americans were listening to songs about drugs and sex, many others were watching television programs with traditional family values. These included The Andy Griffith Show and The Beverly Hillbillies. At the movies, some films captured the rebellious spirit of the times. These included The Graduate and Dr. Strangelove.
Deterrence is the art of producing in the mind of the enemy the fear to attack. And so, because of the automated and irrevocable decision-making process which rules out human meddling, the doomsday machine is terrifying. It's simple to understand and completely credible and convincing.
Gee, I wish we had one of them doomsday machines.
Other films offered escape through spy adventures like the James Bond films. Many Americans refused to tune in and drop out in the 1960s. They took no part in the social revolution. Instead, they continued leading normal lives of work, family, and home. Others, the activists of American society, were busy fighting for peace and racial and social justice.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend.
Women's groups, for example, were seeking equality with men. They wanted the same chances as men to get a good education and a good job. They also demanded equal pay for equal work. A widely popular book on women in modern America was called The Feminine Mystique. It was written by Betty Friedan and published in 1963. The idea known as the feminine mystique was the traditional idea that women have only one part to play in society. They are to have children and stay at home to raise them. In her book, Ms. Friedan urged women to establish professional lives of their own. In the early 1960s, a committee was appointed to investigate the condition of women. It was led by Eleanor Roosevelt. She was a former First Lady. The committee's findings helped lead to new rules and laws. The 1964 Civil Rights Act guaranteed equal treatment for all groups. This included women. After the law went into effect, however, many activists said it was not being enforced. The National Organization for Women, NOW, was started in an effort to correct the problem. The movement for women's equality was known as the Women's Liberation Movement. Activists were called women's libbers. They called each other sisters. Early activists were usually rich, liberal, white women. Later activists included women of all ages, women of color, rich and poor, educated and uneducated. They acted together to win recognition for the work done by all women in America.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.